Radio's coverage of AusCert's 2008 conference is sponsored by Microsoft. Visit itradio.com.au/AusCert08 for IT Radio's full coverage of this year's event and to hear Microsoft's AusCert presentations. Or go to itradio.com.au/security for the Risky Business podcast, honing your eardrums since February 2007.
Hello and welcome to this special AusCert presentation by AT&T staffer and security legend Bill Cheswick. He says passwords, as they exist today, are dead. And while it might not be the most original topic, Cheswick's presentation is a lot of fun. He worked on early firewalls and honeypots at Bell Labs in the 80s and has since done a bunch of interesting stuff, including the Internet Mapping Project. Have you ever heard of a network being described as crunchy on the outside and gooey on the inside, in security terms? Well, that came from a Usenix paper Cheswick wrote in the early 90s. And he's also, as you'll hear, an excellent speaker. So here's his AusCert talk, where he spends the first minute and a half reading from various password policies. Bear with him, though. It is an absolutely fantastic talk. Enjoy.
The password must be at least 7 characters long, not exceed 50 characters. It's case sensitive, at least 1 character, 1 digit. Punctuation characters cannot contain spaces or single or double space apostrophes, must be Roman characters. Your account must contain at least 1 numeric character and 1 alphabetic character, must differ from your account name between 8 and 16 characters in length. Eye of Newt. Any combination of 6 characters that are case insensitive, your password will grant you access, and et cetera. You cannot use things such as United and password. And please remember how it is entered. Oh, thank you. Minimum password length is 6 characters and must include characters from at least 2 of these groups, alpha number special characters. Must be a minimum of 7, must contain 1 numeric symbol, needs to be from 2 to this secret question, must be 2 to 20, 32 characters long. Must be a minimum of 4 words separated by blanks, and a case insensitive cannot contain single quotes, double quotes, or ASCII new line characters, cannot contain 3 or more consecutive identical characters. You may not reuse any of this. Now, supposing you want to use the same password for all of those systems. It's easy to remember the password. It's hard to remember the rules you had to munge it up with to get it to work. Oh, and use a different password on each target system. Change your password frequently. Don't reuse passwords. And by all means, don't write them down. So who's responsible for this sea of arcane password fascism? Well, maybe a little. Maybe a little, but I'm really not going to accept. Because if that's really what you took away from this book, you weren't paying attention. Or maybe you were reading FIPS 112, which was a U.S. government publication on password usage that came out in the mid-80s. And I was thinking about this talk, and I was thinking, boy, what an awful piece of work FIPS 112 was, and looking back on it. So I went back and read it and found that 99.3% of it was absolutely solid security advice, and the rest was just a little dated because the threat models were bad. It was based on time-sharing and mini-computers and early in Moore's Law. Remember what a mini-computer was? It is still the basis of most of our password wisdom, or should be, except that we've got this sort of strong password thing that I'm going to inveigh against this morning. It's mostly still right, even though the threats have changed, because it said that. In fact, it actually says the set of acceptable passwords should be large enough to assure protection against searching and testing threats. That's okay. I'm all right. That's cool. That doesn't say the Eye of Newt stuff we went through. Well, they do have other things. Maximum password life of 1 year. Well, they're thinking about a time-sharing login. What about my connection to my medical system where I have to change my annual allotment of things? I don't know if you folks do this here, but we get that. It's part of our medical system. Or risk associated with, you know, frequent change. What are the risks of not changing your password frequently? Frankly, not much these days because you've lost already. And they should not be shared. That's a good one. I still like that one. Don't relate to identity, history, environment. Okay. But a lot of these were old threats, and this is a new talk, so some of the slides will be duplicate, and I will try to slow down in my speaking a little bit. You know, Unix demons, that's better. Internet protocols, there was no code. The problem, of course, is that people violate this. The stringent rules they're going to write them down. They're going to do stuff. They've got to get their jobs done. And it's usually the fallback security is less secure than the original strong password we had them do with the Eye of Newt rules. Ooh, that may get coined, I suppose. The rules don't make things more secure, and that's what I'm talking about today. And frankly, it is simply poor engineering. Yes, I am looking at the right one here. This is lovely. Oh, two screens and the time and everything. It is simply poor engineering to expect people to create and remember passwords that computers cannot guess in a reasonable amount of time. Get over it. It's especially true in the face of Moore's Law. And by the way, multi-core CPUs, which seem to be hard to use, are really, really good at password cracking. And we knew this back in the 90s and beforehand. Hey, look at that. Dan's here. One of his papers was one of them, pointing out that people pick lousy passwords and continue to do so. And it's poor engineering to remember people, to expect people to remember strong passwords a year later without writing them down. And what's wrong with writing them down if the bad guys never wander in and look at the list? Which might not be, that's, you know, if they're attacking you from Lithuania, they're not looking at an image of your screen with all the post-it notes. Actually, I have it on a little sheet of paper posted on the wall. It's true, someone walking around the building could do this if they could figure out, we'll get back to that. Also, the other problem is that in a world where corporations are combining and merging, you get the problems that John was talking about, where you have numerous different authentication systems. Well, which one am I talking to? And which rules does it have? If it doesn't tell me, I'm guessing. And maybe I'll start using the wrong password to the wrong authentication server because I don't know which one is running which system. Wouldn't it be nice if it told you which authentication server you... Well, it would be nice if there was just one. Okay. And that's what we should work towards. But if there isn't, how about you are talking to this authentication server and we have these password rules just to remind you that, oh yeah, in that environment with those password rules, I would pick this password. It's poor engineering to change passwords often. Strong passwords are hard. It's hard to think of them. It's hard to remember them. Peter Honeyman prints out cryptographically strong passwords. This is, you know, something that looks like TECO editor input for you old farts. This just awful string of characters. And he carries around a little slip of paper in his pocket and logs in using those 16 random bytes every time until after a month or so he's memorized it and then he throws the paper away. How is that for usability? Is Joe Sixpack going to do that? It's poor engineering to allow dictionary attacks at all. And to protect your most important systems with single-factor authentication is poor. So, what are some of the properties of passwords? I'm not going to discuss all of these. I would in a 90-minute talk. Are they memorable? How often do you use them? How easy are they to write down? Can you share them with people? How easy can you shoulder surf these? What's the value of the system they're protecting? How much training does it need? And we'll get into a little bit of that in a moment as I go into some wacko password stuff. What is the cost if it's forgotten? John was talking about that, and today, actually, my talk really goes in nicely because I want to help you try to save money on one of the things he was talking about. And maybe using my name will help convince management to do this. If it does, feel free. Tell them Chess said it was all right. Is it susceptible to eavesdropping, susceptible to replay? Does the user select his password, or do you give him one? And there are all sorts of usability things about that. There are graphical solutions. How are we doing here? Oh, we don't get graphical solutions, which are, you, some of you may not have seen. There's passpoints, which, of course, go back to 1996 and Greg Blonders. Your password is a thing you click on in a picture. It's not text. I like text. But if it's picture, that's sort of interesting. But there's been a whole lot of research. It turns out people pick the same places in pictures mostly. So maybe that doesn't work. And, of course, you can shoulder surf. And the keyboard loggers, when you click on something, will take a little picture of the area that the arrow was in and so they can tell what's going on. So it's not a challenge response, which would be nice. There's passphaces. This came out a number of years ago, and I was at a conference where I got a passphrase. I got a password with passphrases. And then I wrote my password down, which you're not supposed to do. Of course, it's easy. And the question here was, how long can I remember faces? Because though I don't remember people very well, I remember faces very well. Ah, I know this fellow. I've forgotten his name, but he's important. And, you know, it was 4 years ago, and I'll look at his badge sometime. But I know that his face is in my collection. And so can I remember five faces over a long period of time? I remember this past face a week, a month, and a year after I trained myself on it. 4 years later, not so much, but I retrained slightly, and now I remember them perfectly. And of course, now you can too. It doesn't protect anything. There are a lot of other slides that I was going to put in here, but really don't have the time to go in, of various things. Here's a new one, Use Your Illusion, will be coming out in Soups in 2008. The idea is that you blur up pictures, and the person who knows what the picture is can pick the password, knowing what the blurring thing referred to, but someone who didn't know the original image couldn't. You could read it. So let's give some wacko ideas here. We'll just sort of emit a few patentable ideas that you probably don't want to do. Pass maps. Okay, here is a picture of New York State, and it's actually probably a good thing that most of you aren't very familiar with New York State. I think this would work best if you pick some area you're not familiar with. Don't go to your vacation land. Pick Siberia or someplace, wherever you haven't been. You'll notice in the upper right-hand corner there's a big green area. That is the Adirondack Mountains. Actually, I believe the oldest mountains in the world. Very, very round, very hard, and not doing much but lying there with very old rocks in it. And so here is a picture of a satellite photo. This is all from Google, of course. And we zoom in, and I think my password is going to be the location on a lake. Oh, look in the upper left there. You see that lake that looks sort of like an upside-down poodle? Well, we'll zoom in on that. Oh, look, dogs bark, and there seems to be an island at the voice box. We'll zoom in. That'll be my password. Will I remember that? I don't know. Maybe better than I'll remember some of the Iannut stuff. On the other hand, someone looking over my shoulder may or may not be able to reproduce my zooming into some country someplace and finding some spot. And there's also the usability question. Would I find that island again if I tried this password in a week or a month or a year? And how much training would it take? Also, I'm using Google for this, which means there's a stream of data that could be monitored coming from my authentication session. Well, it's hard to analyze how good this is. How about another one? Instead of using the password maps, okay, we'll get Google out of it. We'll go to a mathematical place. My password, I'm going to do sort of a northeast-southwest. North meaning I'll pick some part at the top. And we'll zoom in on it a little. And then I'll pick something on the east, which we'll just go through there. I pick over there, I think it's that place, and I'll go to the south end of that little structure, which is down there, and then go to the east end of it, and zoom in a little bit. And this location in the completely mathematical Mandelbrot set is my password. Now, I am not confident I could reproduce that path, but maybe with a little practice I could. And maybe this would be interesting. The problem, of course, with these is that none of them are challenge response. You can shoulder surf this or catch it somehow, and the password is not single use. But at least it got Google out of the equation. So let's try some more wacko ideas. What I really want is challenge response. One-time password, you see it once, then it goes away. It's a different one next time. Someone sniffing cannot tell how it works. Well, that usually requires a device, and maybe it's an iPhone or something. We have equipment that do this now, and we should be using it more. But what if we could just have the human do human computing challenge response? Well, humans are pretty lousy at computing, but they're lousy at passwords, too. Maybe we could do functional passwords. This is a wacko idea. So one-time passwords solve a lot of problems. And if we can do it without equipment, that'd be nice. Text only would be nice. Then in at least Unix, I can use it and make it a PAM module. And it would fit into other challenge response processing. So the computer's going to give me a challenge. I'm going to think a moment, type in a response, and the computer, it's going to know it's me. But someone else is going to look and do it. The key insight here is that humans cannot compute well, but maybe they can obfuscate well. Okay? Well, what do I mean? We will now go to the world of baseball. Now, I know most of you don't follow baseball. That's fine. In fact, that's excellent. Now, think about a baseball player, professional sports, under a lot of stress. Now, baseball, like football, has centralized control. And in fact, if you think of it, it's sort of odd that a land of the free and the home of the brave has sort of fascist sports where managers control what goes on out in the field. And we're going to talk a little bit about how they do that today. These baseball players are under a lot of stress, and they're getting information vital to the game. And what happens is, you know, there's a lot of nothing happening and then a quick play in baseball. And what they do is they plan things. I'm going to hit, swing and hit the ball no matter where it is, and he's going to run. That's a hit and run. That's a play they call. Or the coach says, no, you're not going to take this, or you're going to steal. There are a few bits of information they want to transmit before every pitch. Now, of course, these guys aren't always very bright. Babe Ruth, who is arguably one of the best baseball players in history, would forget the signals that they use with a few steps walking out onto the field. So I shall now give you... Okay, watch that fellow in the blue. See what he's doing with his hands? See, it looks like he has some weird perversion. He has just signaled to the guy in first base whether to run or not run. He's also signaled to the batter whether to swing or not. Well, how could you know when to swing or not? Sometimes the coach says, I don't care what you want to do. This ball's going by. The pitcher can't do it. Other times the coach says, do what you want. The point is they're sent a little message out. Let's look at another one. Watch that fellow again. Okay, he's standing there. Is he watching me? Yes, okay, here we go. Tap, tap, tap. One, three, tap, tap. Skin, shirt, hat. Okay, did you get that? Now, these baseball players got a signal. Several bits were transmitted in that. Obviously, most of what he did was bull. Something was a signal that said the next tap is important. And then the next tap is if I hit the skin, that means to bunt, or something like that. And maybe the tap after it says, ignore everything up to this point. So they have little indicators in there. And there's hundreds of years, 100 years of experience with this. It's not cricket to steal these, but you are legal. It's legal to do so. And there are major baseball games that have been lost when these signals have been stolen. Here's one more, just so you can see what it's like. See, he comes over, he wants to make sure the batter sees him. Hat, shirt, 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 tap, tap, shirt, up, down, tap, tap. Okay. I want to spend some time with some professional baseball players and learn a little more about this. This is interesting because the guy he's giving signals to might get traded to the other team next week, which means he has to be able to change these indicators and not get stolen. Now, I'd be interested to know if you're aware of other sports that have signaling, and the only one I know of is rugby. When you do the throw-in, the fellow just gives an indication of how far he's throwing in. It's the only one I've heard of. In cricket, I guess they just tell you what they're going to do over lunch. So there's not really a covert channel there. But afterwards, if you would tell me there's some more, I think there's something here. This is a half-baked idea. So my proposed approach is to use human-computed responses with obfuscation. Clearly, obfuscation was important in those baseballs. And here is an example I tried. Now, the challenge is the column of username, PID, and date. And the response are a bunch of characters. And these are on my website if you want to go look at them. And most of them are valid logins. A few of them are in red and are no. It was an experiment I tried. Would I be willing to do an algorithmic password to log in? And I tried this for about half a year, and this was some samples of it. And the idea is that there's something in that challenge that I'm pulling out, doing a little bit of simple math in my head, and then typing a response which is mostly garbage, but has a little bit of vital stuff in it. If you just sat down and typed gibberish, you'd have a very low probability of logging in. So that was my idea. It seemed to work pretty well. The literature for this, the name for this, pass authentication is just one of the names, goes back to 1967. Programmers loved to do this. There was a fellow back then who said, well, I'm going to have my challenge be the octal and the answer be the assembler name for that octal machine code. It goes on, and people have done this through the years, and there have been fancy information theoretic ones where they can prove the entropy of the response, and there have been others that don't. There are lots of names if you want to go look at this. It took me 2 days just going through the related work to get all of those different words that cover this field. Possible uses, emergency holographic login. You don't want to type your password on the machine you're in, but you really need to log in once. But could we make this work well enough that maybe you log in once a day, and if someone watched you for 365 days, he wouldn't be able to tell what you'd done? I don't know. That's just an interesting thing. And the home run would be online transactions of banking. I mean, if we could actually do this. without a little device. This would be cheap and wonderful. But Joe Sixpack, and I have no idea what Australian equivalent of Joe Sixpack is, the average person is probably unable to do most of this. The math is hard. And maybe you just have passwords for smart people. I don't know. Or the other one, it's really alarming. Maybe you supply your own pass authentication to the bank. You give them a little program, and they run it, and it proves it's you. Yes, okay. I know that is a wild propeller-headed idea, and it's never going to happen. It was just a thought. So some current trends. Did I do that? It must be the neighbors upstairs. Let's revise this advice. Let's look at what's going on here. Nowadays, passwords are captured by phishing. Well, if you're captured by phishing, it doesn't matter how good your password is. Peter Honeyman can memorize all 4096 bits of his public key, and this will still get it, unless they didn't have a buffer large enough to hold a password that big, which is possible. Bad guys make security mistakes, too. Keystroke logging, again, game over. Not by dictionary attacks. There are almost no circumstances where a dictionary attack is appropriate. There are a few, and I'll mention a couple. But if we're not defending against dictionary attacks, why do we have the Eye of Newt password rules out there? And most attacks are wholesale. Now, we've heard some excellent talks here about non-wholesale, about targeted attacks, and this gets to be a more serious problem. But I'm not sure a strong password is going to help much. You still need dictionary attacks for standard Unix logins and SSH password logins, which I recommend you do not use, and against captured Oracle streams. If I've got your PGP key, the key ring, I can start trying things on it and see if my answers are correct. I can also do that with your SSH key if I have your key ring. But these are not mainstream attacks. They're certainly important. I'm not saying there aren't people who do these, but for the most part, certainly not grandma's attack. So I'm going to give some suggestions here. These are guidelines, suggestions. The real thing, the real message is to think about the security that you're doing and don't just say, well, we need strong passwords or anything else. Figure out what's needed and review these. Again, this message keeps coming out from down here all the time. Rethink and re-engineer the systems when appropriate and at least check them now and then. So updated advice for users, which we all are. I like three levels of passwords, and that means three passwords. One is a garbage password. That's the one I use for accounts that they want me to have a password, and I don't give a damn. Okay, the New York Times, same password all the way through. Another level is sort of a higher grade password, inconvenient as stolen. I really don't want you guys to have my Amazon password. That would be a problem. But you're not going to run away with my retirement money. That would be for the third class. If you could get the stock and bank accounts. How many people here, I didn't know we were going to have these little guys. How many people here do online banking? Okay, so there you go. Pretty strong password for that one, huh? You know, sure hope you don't get sniffed. Not sure how much that protects it. Of course, what happens is the bank only lets you try a few times. If there's a three strikes and you're out, then your password can be something from the dictionary. And if it isn't one of the first three I'm going to pick, the account gets locked. Game over. You're out of the game. And if you must write down passwords, go ahead. More advice. But don't write down the password. Write a clue to yourself about what the password is. So that if someone picks up the sheet, they can't just type in the letters. And I found that works pretty well. Of course, nowadays, I write down a clue to what the password is and a clue to what the Eye of Newt rules are for that particular account. So I say, I can't put a space in this one, or it has to be all caps or whatever. Use variations to meet strong. I don't remember what I meant by that, so we'll just move on. I just said that. Okay. For implementers, that's you folks, mostly. This is why I'm giving this. Get out of the dictionary attack game. Count and manage authentication attempts with a server. This is not hard to do. In fact, how many people here have heard of Pam Tally? Almost nobody. I went and said, gosh, we need a Pam module that counts PAT login attempts and locks the account. That sounds like a great idea. It was done 10 years ago. It's sitting out there. It's available for Linux. I actually don't like the code very well. There's Pam Tally 2. It needs a little work. And, by the way, all you Linux folks who complain that software is only written for Windows. BSD folks complain that software is only written for Windows and Linux. Go the extra four lines of code and make it work for all of them. PamTally doesn't work on FreeBSD. It ought to. It's not a mind-boggler. It's a quick summer student job. We should do this. You can drop it into SSH so people can stop doing dictionary attacks on your SSH if you must use passwords. This is what I'm saying. And you block accounts. It's better to block or slow an account than to lose it. Now, I realize that a locked account can have its cost, but maybe you just have it on lock over a certain amount of time so that the attack rate is limited. And if one particular IP address is especially inquisitive, block it. Yes, I know, denial of service attacks. Still, we're not losing the account anymore, are we? And I just talked about that. Use the authentication server. I talked about that, too. Good. See, these just fly by when you say things twice. If the password is forgotten, instead of what they usually have is a backup password, mother's maiden name, which, of course, is ludicrous because all of that ancestor data is online now. You can find my mother's maiden name. So you have to make up a mother's maiden name. But why is our backup security weaker than the original password? If you wanted a strong password to begin with, and then you have this second one that's weaker, as a bad guy, I'm going to do what's the attack called? It's an attack, a version weakening attack, a version downgrade attack. I want you to go to mother's maiden name because I know that one. Instead, have the second question or the answer, the reminder, be my notes of my standard password but with no spaces and letters in it. So a reminder of what the primary is. I think that might cut down a lot on a number of calls that you get from users who are trying to log in and get their work done, which is really part of my point, is that there's a huge cost to lost and forgotten passwords, especially since we're using these passwords, and there are things we can do to make things easier. And, of course, blacklisting doesn't have to be forever. You can sort of, well, he tried this on Friday night. Monday morning we'll open the account up again to slow attempts, something like that. Identify the authentication server and password rules. If nothing else, this is a one-line change, sort of, to the HTML of the server they're talking to, right? This server has this and goes to this page, and here are the password rules. Yes, it leaks a little information about how the password is, but that better not be your security anyway, and we're trying to make this easier and cheaper. Here's one. You know, if you're running a service that everyone connect to, then it has a cross-section, a surface area, as the Microsofties call it, that is exposed to the entire world. If you could just limit the people who could try the attacks to people you've already blessed with a client certificate, then suddenly, instead of having 6 billion possible attackers, you have only your user base, which is a much better idea. We already do certificate handling. We already have clients that do not trust servers. How about a server that says, I'm only going to talk to clients that I want to? Protocol's already there. The SSL libraries are already there. Usually it requires just a little extra work in the mailer. For example, as near as I can tell, my Mac mailer does not handle a client certificate. Why not? It probably does, and there's just no GUI to interact to it. I haven't found it yet. But if we do this, then I can make my IMAPS server only talk to people who might plausibly log in, people who have my certificate. And don't make account names too easy to guess, because if I have a good password, maybe I'll just try one password with lots of different account names. Social security numbers are too guessable, and we get into some of the wonderful solutions we heard of yesterday. Accounts should not be shared, that's right. One-time passwords are stronger. There are no replay attacks. The bad guy must be present to win, which is always nice. And it may not be shareable. We won't get in the S key race. This is an actual login I made, I guess, about 13 years ago. Getting to be a graybeard, I guess. Actual challenge, actual response for that same challenge, the same response would work. I use this device, which is now lost in the mists of time. Secure ID has won, and it's good enough, I guess. Some sort of multi-factor authentication is great. A dongle is fine, but I want it to be two-factor, something you know, something you have. This machine has a public key for my SSH at home, and it is unlocked with a passphrase, dictionary attack resistant, that I type into here. It doesn't go over the wire. Okay, that's two-factor. You have to steal this and use rubber hose cryptography or put something in here. A PC is fine. That's what I just talked about. Okay. newer options. Oh, gosh, I love this. This is great. I was on the Mac for 4 hours before I decided I'd never go back. And laptops are fun. By the way, I am a shareholder of the Apple Corporation. I guess. And I love my iPhone. It's brilliant. And actually, the Nano is pretty cool, too. So there we go. All right, but time's a-wasting. Cell phones give a nice channel back, and there are people who are using these, SMS messages, that sort of thing. Multi-factor is nice. We talked about that. Biometrics, you know, they're about 90% accurate, and there's a bunch of workarounds, some of them fairly disgusting. Well, if you wanted to go bio, you know, you get to start working with Jell-O and other goo and things. Not bad for an auxiliary factor, and obviously with DNA, it could be 100%, except that we're all in here shedding our passwords all over the place. So I'm not sure that's ever going to work out very well, unless they actually suck it out of visible removal of cheek. Well, anyway. We have crypto. The crypto wars are over. We're allowed to use strong crypto pretty much worldwide, I guess maybe not France, and who knows what the rules are. But in general, you can use SSL with strong encryption, and it will keep pretty much everyone away, probably. Okay, I don't really care if the spooks can get through it. My guess is they can't, but there's something else in the cryptology they can get through. Unencrypted streams, SNF and dictionary attack opportunities, those are gone. Those are the sorts of things that Phipps was worried about. Crypto fixes it, so use IMAP's HTTPS. It's there. It's worth setting up. You got to get out of the game. SSH, disable password logins, or you get this. Well, I'm sure many of you have seen this. People keep trying to log in. This machine has no passwords that will log in. They can try this till the end of the universe. Not that my machine would last that long. And I told you about the two-factor authentication I use. There are also products coming that are doing near public authentication servers, and I think this is a great idea. Why not? AT&T authentication server. This fellow says he's an AT&T user. Well, ask him this. He said that. Yes, he is really William Cheswick, according to AT&T. Well, for me, that's good enough for a variety of things. There are companies I might trust. There are companies I might be stupid to trust, but that's a marketplace. We could work that out. I think the idea is appealing. And there are commercial solutions. There are some maybe simpler than these. You know, do we really need to have ASN1 in the middle of these? namespace issues. It looks like your password in the world is becoming your email password. It used to be you could pick something would happen. Yeah, I got it right here, actually. It's right. Yeah, it's good, yeah. Of course, yeah, but these things take time to deploy. There's a huge installed base. You know, it's all this legacy stuff. It's like the king complaining, oh, you can shoot arrows through my knights, but I have such a legacy investment in all this armor. I'm really growing to hate the word legacy, and I work in a company that's full of legacy stuff. Who owns the application you're connecting to? Who hosts it? Is it a third-party application? Who developed it? Did the developer leave 4 years ago? Do we know what's going on? How do we fix all this stuff? That's another reason to get a bunch of application servers together into one, is so that you understand what you've got. Maybe you should just reinvent it anyway. Selling weaker passwords. Now, I have given this, the gist of this talk to security professionals of very high caliber, and many of them, maybe most of them, say, you've lost your mind, or convince me, or what's going on. You know, do I really want my passwords to be weaker? Well, remember, in the U.S., my ATM card has a PIN of 4 digits, and that's been working. I don't have to change it every month or anything. That technology has been working since about 1971. 4 digits. The point is, of course, it eats my card after 3 attempts. This is a pretty important application, involves real money. So it can work. It can cut support costs. You can tell them I said it was a good idea. Okay, if it'll help. Chez says, no, we shouldn't do that anymore. But I'm hoping you're doing a little more thinking about the problems than that. Backup passwords are weaker anyway. It improves the user's experience. Don't you want your customers to be less frustrated? Oh, damn, this password, I hate using this system. They're less cooperative, they're going to break your rules, and annoying customers is bad business. So what are the benefits of strong passwords? Almost none in most cases. I mean, supercomputers are really good at cracking these big things. And if they really want you, they'll just give the problem to someone who has a bigger supercomputer. I've seen it done. You want strong authentication, not strong passwords. Sort of strong cryptology, not strong cryptography. You want to get it all right. Ubiquitous laptops should help. So, distribute and require client certificates when you can. Use SSH with passphrases. Crypto services like IMAPs limit passwords attempts. Frankly, I'm disappointed in all of you. We should be doing better than this. The bad guys are getting better. They're getting much scarier. The stuff I'm reading now in papers makes me desperately afraid of the future. And we're still trying to get passwords right. The bad guys are getting really good. The people who are really, really focused on this, the pros, the national actors, are scary about this. And I'm not sure how to protect against them. And we should be addressing those. And this other stuff should be old hat. So anyway, thank you for your attention. I've had a delightful time. My pleasure.